I think it was just a quieter time. You threw me a beautiful baby shower.
Thanks. Yeah, that was like the infertility Olympics. Like having to throw your best friend a baby shower when that's literally all you want. Mm-hmm. But it was also such a blessing, and I did derive so much joy from celebrating you. Like, and I think that was sort of the challenge, was balancing these two different feelings of jealousy for sure, but also joy. Been There, Injected That is a TMI podcast about going through infertility and all the hormone injections, awkward moments, and nervous breakdowns along the way. I'm Elise Ash. Hi.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm good. You?
I'm good. Hi, everyone. Okay. This is going to be a really special one for a lot of different reasons, I feel like. Okay. I'll do the intro.
Okay.
Today on the podcast, we are getting really personal. As if talking about ultrasound wands going up your vagina weren't personal enough. This is a different kind of personal. Today, we are talking to someone very special to me who hasn't gone through infertility herself directly, but has had a front row seat to the havoc that it's wrecked on my life. So today, we're talking to my best friend, Jackie Meisel. Thanks so much for being here, Jackie.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, how's it going?
It's going really well. I'm excited to be here.
Are you nervous?
I'm a little nervous.
You guys, Jackie is an introvert, and I don't think you understand, like, what a big favor this is that she's volunteered to be on the show.
Well, I'm also excited because I feel like I really have had a front row seat. And so I think that, you know, our relationship has changed, and there's been a lot of, like, ups and downs, but a lot of positive to come from it, so...
I think looking back now, I can see how really tough it must have been to be my friend during that time, because I was a pretty tough person to be around, and I can't imagine how it must have felt to really watch someone you care about and love go through something really tough when you feel like there's not much you can really do.
Yes. I mean, it is really hard, and there's, I think I learned a lot of valuable lessons from it. And that I still use today often, like even when I meet people, just being really cognizant of thinking about like what I say. Even now when I, you know, I have a few people in my life, coworkers that are going through really hard things. And I try to be really aware and sensitive to like not just serve up platitudes and say like everything will be fine, you know, and I think, like, I was aware of that before, but our, like, dynamic and your experience has given me a lot of perspective on, like, how do I just listen and be there for someone and, like, not try and interject, like, what I want to happen just to, like, make it feel better in that moment, even though the other person has a lot that's going on.
Yeah, and I mean, that's really tough. I think our instinct really as people and humans when we want to connect is to help other people feel better. And even though it feels like it's coming from an altruistic place where you want to make somebody happier, you want to take away their pain, I think a little bit of it is inherently selfish. You
Agreed.
you want to get out of the awkward situation. Right. You feel uncomfortable.
And you want to check a box and be like, look, I was there for them. I did it.
Yeah. I am such a good person, you guys.
Right.
So, Jackie, let's take a step back. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners and maybe say a little bit about who you are, what you do, where you live, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I am Jackie Meisel, friend of Elise's for over a decade.
Happy anniversary.
It's been more than that, hasn't it?
It's been like 12 years.
12 years.
Jinx.
I am a mother of two and a senior social media specialist for Boston Scientific.
Awesome. And you live in the Minneapolis Twin Cities area too?
I do, yep.
Awesome. So why don't we talk a little bit about how we know each other, and let's like jump in that time machine and go back 12 years and just kind of give everyone the brief update on how
yes.
we became friends.
We both attended Miami Ad School, Minneapolis.
In Minneapolis, which is super confusing.
It's
for anyone.
Confusing. That's why I was like, wait, I better say Minneapolis because... That's not implied.
Yeah, Miami Ad School has a bunch of different locations. And so one of them, ironically, was in Minneapolis. So people would get really excited. Oh, my gosh, you go to Miami Ad School. But like, in Minneapolis, though.
Yeah.
So you still need to wear, like, gloves and a hat.
Right. Yeah. It was very cold. And we met on the first day of our program in September of 2007.
Yeah, we did. We sat next to each other in, I believe it was, like, a Photoshop class or, like, an InDesign class. And I was working really hard to make Jackie be my friend. Like, I sat next to her every... Jackie's an introvert and I'm an extrovert. And I was like, this is going to be a tough nut to crack, but it's going to be super worth it. I just know.
And I was like, will I make friends ever? And so thankfully, Elise...
worked really hard to
be your friend. She did, like, 80% of the work and I did, like, 20% of the work. But I was happy about it.
Yeah, and then I coaxed you out of your shell. And we've been really good friends kind of ever since then.
Yeah. And so we, yeah, our friendship began before either of us were married. We still were, we were both dating our...
Now husbands.
Now husbands. but, it, yeah, it's been, there's been a lot of milestones. Like, I felt really honored to be a part of your wedding and meet all of your friends and family. And I feel like I still, like, I consider, like, your mom and your sister, like, you know, kind of... one of our family members.
Yeah, I know. I feel that way about your mom, too. Shout out to Beth, Jackie's mom. She's awesome and very into, like, Zodiac stuff. So I've found her to be a great resource when I have questions about being a Cancer.
Also, my mom struggled with infertility herself and went through IVF after I was born.
Okay, so she had experienced secondary infertility then.
Yeah, so she... had pretty severe endometriosis and never thought that she could have a kid. So my parents, this is like a big overshare, but didn't need to use, you know, birth control because she thought that she could never have a kid. And it was like a fluke that a pregnancy even happened.
The pregnancy being you.
Yep, me. And then after that, never able to conceive again.
How did that conversation come up with your mom? Like, was that something that she just kind of... told you about, or when you and Todd, your husband, decided you wanted to have kids, or was that something that you just always knew?
I feel like I always knew it because I remember going to her doctor's appointments with her because I was like 4 or 5.
Oh my gosh, you remember that?
I remember it. And I remember like all of her sisters also had really severe endometriosis, and so my whole life, everybody was like, "You're very high risk for this disease," and so I feel like it kind of translated over to my life. And I think it probably framed my perception of, like, I think very early on I was like, I don't know if I'll ever be able to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like, all of the women in my family haven't been able to.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a way to start this, like, not awkwardly.
You can just start it awkwardly.
Okay. So what do you like about our friendship?
I like a lot of things about our friendship. I think that's why it's lasted over a decade. But I actually wrote down a few things. I feel like we have a really safe, trusting relationship in that we've been able to be vulnerable with each other and just, like, trust that the other person will listen and be there. And I think there's a lot of different examples from both of our sides of that. And I think that we also, there's an element of unconditional love.
Yeah.
That's what I wrote down. And I feel like there's a lot of empathy too. So I think, I don't ever recall a time where I feel like there wasn't any trust or there was like any cattiness. I feel like it's been very safe and loving from the beginning.
Well, yeah. And I think also like we've definitely had hiccups or things where we maybe haven't seen eye to eye, but we've also pushed ourselves to have conversations that probably a lot of people would feel uncomfortable. I mean, they were uncomfortable conversations, but I think because we know the other person's coming from love, and it's inevitable you're going to step in shit and, like, hurt someone's feelings. It's just, like, part of being a human and having close friendships. Yeah. But I think because we've each been open to hearing the other person and trying to work through it and, like, putting in a lot of effort, that's been where some of the conflicts that could have snowballed have been squashed.
Agree. Yes.
We're killing it.
We're doing a really great job. Yeah. Go us. I feel like we both have different styles of communicating, but we both are able to do it
right
when we need to.
So that was going to be when I thought of that question. I think what I think makes our friendship so special is we're very different.
Mm-hmm.
And we have really different communication styles, but also very emotional, different emotional lives and different emotional workings. But I think that's really helpful because we're able to kind of pull each other out when we need to, or help the other person see a different angle or perspective that maybe they're not seeing in the moment.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah. And I think maybe some of the challenges we've had have just been because of those natural differences, where I'm a lot more type A and a lot mm-hmm. more of a control freak and a lot more anxious. And you're someone who just has way more chill than I do.
I'm quietly anxious.
You're a closeted anxious person.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so kind of getting into it. Do you remember having conversations, just you and me, about what it would be like to be moms? Like before either of us wanted to have kids necessarily, or, you know, right after we were married, but yeah. before we were really thinking actively about having kids. Do you remember these conversations that we used to have?
I do. I remember taking a walk in my neighborhood.
I remember that same walk.
And I know that I expressed like some kind of being fearful or unsure of motherhood.
I remember that conversation being like you being confident that that was what you wanted, but definitely having reservations and fears around it.
Yes.
And feeling like, is this something I really want, and can I do this, and how would this look? And I remember that conversation being you expressing some vulnerability with that and me being like, well, I want to be a mom. And
yeah,
I feel like I was less scared and more like, let's do it. And you were more like, I'm not so sure.
Yeah. And I think part of that perspective was probably like, I don't even know if I can have kids because of this like family history of mine.
So do you think you were maybe a little bit guarding yourself or protecting probably. Yourself from...
Yeah, like reflecting back on it, yeah, I think I probably was. And I don't think I ever, like, I never fantasized about becoming a mom, and I think it's partly because of that. Like, oh, I don't, you know, maybe I'll just, like, do other things.
Like, don't get your hopes up.
Right.
I remember also talking a little bit about, and kind of just fantasizing about how awesome it'd be for us to be, like, pregnant together.
Yes.
And, oh my gosh, we could go to prenatal yoga.
Yep.
And we could, I don't know, like go to some kind of, what do pregnant people do? Like go to some kind of Lamaze class,
right.
Or like hypnobirthing.
Lamazda, or Joy Tribbiani, you could call it, I think.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I feel like I had this whole scenario in my head. And I think because we're also such good couple friends. So
yes.
Jackie and her husband, Todd, have been friends with myself and my husband, Brad. I mean, the four of us have really built a strong foundational friendship. Between all four of us, like
yeah.
I feel like Todd is a great friend of me. I'm sure you feel...
Likewise. I text Brad, just me and him.
What do you text about? Soup recipes?
Soup recipes, also like tech questions that I know I have to bypass you for.
Shoot. The Green Bay Packers.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably some fantasy football
yep.
questions,
yeah.
that kind of thing.
Well, I feel like I do pretty well at fantasy, so people should
He's
be asking
probably,
me
He
questions.
Should definitely be asking you. His team is trash this year. I feel like we could just make this a fantasy football podcast.
New podcast.
New podcast idea. Jackie and Elise dissect fantasy football. Love it. Two listeners. It would be us. We'll be right back. So one of the things that I'm personally really bad at is asking for help. I hate asking for help. And that vulnerability stuff that Brené Brown talks about is so real. But I'm going to ask for your help right now because I need it. So if you have 5 minutes, either right now or on the bus home from work, or if there's a quick ad break during your Hulu binge, please take a second to rate this podcast. The best way for other fertility warriors to find Been There, Injected That is for our listeners to rate us and write us a review. So please go ahead and do that. And thank you so much. Back to the show. Why don't we fast forward a little bit to the time that you told Brad and I that you were pregnant?
The first time.
Yeah, the first time.
The very first time.
The very, very first time.
Okay. We decided to have dinner together.
The four of us.
The four of us. And we had just found out, and I think that I must have been not very far along, like 5 or 6 weeks. So it was super new. So we told you guys over dinner.
And you said, hey, Elise, what are you doing on April 15th? And I pulled out my Google Calendar, like the type A person that I am, and I said, nothing on the calendar. And you said,
we're having a baby, I think.
And then I started crying.
And I think that Todd perceived it as happy tears.
I think it was happy. I think I was really shocked.
Yeah.
And I think I talk a lot about how that moment was the first time in what would be a string of times that I ever felt complicated feelings around somebody else's pregnancy mm-hmm. announcement. Like, that had never happened to me before as somebody who loves babies and kids and was yeah. just, like, really happy when people were going to expand their families. Like, especially when it's your friends and they're so cool and you just think, oh, my gosh, I can't wait to meet their child.
Right.
I've always been someone who was just rapid fire. When's your due date? Is it a boy mm-hmm. or girl? Mm-hmm. Like, what names are you thinking of? Yep. Like, what does the nursery look like? Like, that was always my default response. And then that was the first time where I think I felt a rush of emotions and I didn't really know what they were in that moment.
Yeah.
But it was just a lot of feelings. I think we all cried.
I think we all cried. Yeah.
I think it was also one of the other feelings I had when we left the dinner and Brad and I were kind of chatting after we left. I think I didn't know that you guys were trying. Like, we'd never talked about that. And you were never like, hey, by the way, we're pulling the goalie. Like, I didn't even know you were going through that, you know?
And I think that we had just been like, okay, like, let's just see what happens, Todd and I. And we didn't have, like, a big conversation. Like, we're going to try. Like, it was a very early, like, I don't know, maybe it'll happen.
Sure.
And it happened quickly. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we had a lot of time to understand, like, what it takes to, like, think about conceiving a child.
Right.
And all of, like, the cycle math and things that you have to do.
Oh my gosh, cycle math is like a great name for a company. Like an ovulation tracking app.
Right, or like a bike. So, and then we miscarried that baby. So at 9 weeks. So it was only a few weeks after that.
Mm-hmm. What were you kind of going through as you were learning about that?
Well, we had our first ultrasound. It must have been 7 weeks, whenever they bring you in normally, like mm-hmm. between 6 or 8 weeks. And I remember, like, rushing to, it was like a big medical building that the office was in. And Todd was supposed to meet me there, but he was running super late, so they got started without him. And I remember, like, the technician, like, not finding, like, the sack, but nothing in it. And like, but not understanding what was happening at the time. And mm-hmm. then Todd getting there and the tech was like, well, I think we're going to talk about this in another room kind of thing.
Okay.
And it was pretty, like, it was pretty dramatic. And I think we were super surprised because I didn't know, like, a thing that could happen.
Sure.
I mean, you always hear about it, but nobody talks about it.
Yeah.
So, and thankfully, it happened quickly and I was able to pass it naturally.
Okay.
So it didn't require any procedures. Mm-hmm. But it was really intense and emotional.
I think what happened next was you'd miscarried and
It was September,
and that was kind of when we were just kind of starting to try.
Yes.
And so then all of a sudden you and I kind of became cycle buddies.
Yep.
And we would text each other. I mean, we were texting each other all the time anyway, but all of a sudden it became more like, oh, got my period today, or
Bummer.
Oh my gosh, okay, well, I just peed on an ovulation stick and, you know, we're a go for next month. And there were a couple months of us kind of trying in tandem.
Mm-hmm.
Which I liked.
Agree.
Because I was like, oh, this is more fun with a friend.
Agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was fun. And so that was 3 months probably.
Yeah, 3 or 4 months.
Yeah. And then we conceived our daughter in January.
Right.
And then I think things changed.
Do you remember how you told me that you were pregnant this time with your daughter?
I do remember. I was actually standing in Red Wing. I worked for a Red Wing shoe company at the time, in like a coffee with the CEO, like all company meeting. And I had like, we had just found out, like either the night before, it must have been the night before, and I knew that I had to tell you quickly. Because, like, the longer I waited, the weirder it would get. And I knew it would be tough. So I decided that I would text you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to tell you, but give you space to feel your feelings.
Which was, like, an A-plus move.
I worried about it quite a bit at the time.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's not a text that I was excited to read,
sure.
But in retrospect and in hindsight, it was the generous thing to do because you weren't asking me to perform in front of you
right. Something
that I couldn't emotionally do in that moment, which I think is something I had to do in a lot of other friendships and that I resented.
Mm-hmm.
And having to feel like if I didn't react in a specific way, I was a bad friend. And so I think when you texted me, and I remember also like the way that you had phrased everything was very generous, where you were like, I have some news. I know this is going to be really hard for you to hear, and I don't expect you to text back and process this on your own time. There were like a million billion caveats that were so generous, and it wasn't like, hey, guess what? Baby emoji, exclamation point, like confetti. You know, it was more, you were really giving me space within the text to process as well. So even though, of course, it was tough for me to hear in my own way, it was still, I feel like, emotionally generous.
I'm glad. Well, that's what I was hoping for.
Yeah.
Because I knew, like, deep down inside, you'd be happy for us.
Totally.
But it's also not easy.
It's this whole balance of happy for you, sad for me.
Yep.
And I think that's something that's very misunderstood and something that's kind of messed up some of my other friendships, where one piece of that pie wasn't really understood.
Mm-hmm.
Where it seemed like maybe I was just being 100% selfish and there wasn't any of the joy, or I felt like I wasn't being given the benefit of the doubt or any flexibility there. And I felt like if I wasn't faking joy 100% of the time, there was no room for, like, my messy feelings. I had to act 100% happy, and if I wasn't, then I was the bad friend.
Right.
Yeah, and so when you texted me, when you were in Red Wing at work texting me about your early pregnancy, I don't know if I ever told you about this. I was in a Mexican restaurant waiting for a beauty appointment. I think I was going to get my eyebrows waxed or something.
Huh.
And I got drunk by myself, like at this Mexican restaurant. I had 2 margaritas. I went and got my brows waxed, and then I went to the movies because I couldn't drive home because there was a movie theater like in that shopping center too. And I went, I saw the movie Wild, and I just like cried the whole movie while I sobered up.
I'm glad you didn't drive.
And then I drove home. But I just remember also feeling like I needed to kind of sit with those feelings a little bit on my own instead of just like going home and seeing Brad and feeling like I had to give some sort of like press release statement about like how I was feeling.
And having him like potentially give you words to feel yourself like, oh, well, you know, it should be this way. Not that he would necessarily do that.
He totally would necessarily do that. And he did do that all the time. And that's exactly what would have happened. I would have gone home and he would have said, why can't you just be happy for them? Why are you making this about you? You know, they deserve this. We'll have our time. And I was like, go the fuck away. Like, I don't want to hear any of that. I just want to be sad and feel badly for myself.
Also, that's a really healthy thing to do. Don't they always tell you to feel your feelings in therapy?
They do.
So good job.
Thank you. How do you think our friendship changed while you were pregnant, once you started showing more?
I think that we went through a period of distance.
Mm-hmm.
Where we just maybe didn't see each other quite as much.
Were you kind of trying to maybe conceal certain parts of your life at that time from me because you thought maybe it'd be painful?
Yeah, I felt like at the time I probably felt like I couldn't share. I couldn't be like, hey, we had this today. You know, like it didn't feel like a great place to like give you the details of ultrasounds and like the size of the baby in fruit terms or whatever.
Yeah, I probably would have fucking hated that.
Yeah. So I tried not to share that part, even though it was a really big part of our lives and everyday lives. So I think we did our best and we still hung out. And I think it was just a quieter time. He threw me a beautiful baby shower.
Thanks. Yeah, that was that was like the infertility Olympics. Like having to throw your best friend a baby shower when that's literally all you want. Mm-hmm. But it was also such a blessing, and I did derive so much joy from celebrating you. Like, and I think that was sort of the challenge, was balancing these two different feelings of jealousy for sure, but also joy.
Yeah.
What do you think was maybe the hardest part of being my friend at that time?
I think not knowing what you're going through. Like, as much as I tried to listen and be there, like, I don't think that anybody who has, if you've never gone through it, you don't know. And so you try to say the right things and you want to empathize, but you don't know. Like, there's only so much you can do as like a outsider.
Right.
So I think that was the hardest part for me.
I think things got a little easier for me, actually, once Violet was born. Once you gave birth to your daughter, for some reason, I think I just had a much easier time with the whole situation. Like, I was still jealous of you and your newborn and nursing and all your new life, like what your new life looked like. But I think being able to see your daughter and hold her and get to see that I was going to be part of her life felt really good in a time that most things didn't feel good. And I think I was actually like a little nervous of that time, like, being near her and you would maybe be some kind of trigger. But for some reason, I think it was almost easier once she was here versus like in utero.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, at that point, like, she's out, like, there's not this big event that we're all waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, kids develop a little personality. And so you start to see them like as their own human, and it's less about me, more about her.
Yeah. I do think that there was an element of that. And then also, as we were kind of progressing through our own story, we were getting closer and closer to potentially having a child as well. So I think I was actually getting more hope around the time that Violet was born and we were kind of hanging out and she was like a new part of our crew.
Yeah.
And it got a little bit more fun and it was almost like a preview as to what life could look like for us one day.
Yeah.
And then what happened was Violet was born, started growing up, and we went through IVF. We had our first transfer. We saw our first positive pregnancy test. And you and Todd were so supportive and such great friends through that early time for us. It was really exciting.
Yeah.
And I felt like, oh my gosh, I have my person again. And it reminded me of when we were trying together originally. Yes. Where I could text you and be like, is this ligament pain normal? Is this normal? When did you have this screening? How did this work?
Right. And I was trying to like not over advise you.
Right.
I really held back.
And then a couple weeks after finding out that we were pregnant and everything was going well, you had more news.
We did. We had conceived George.
Your second child.
Our second child.
And so George is about 6 weeks younger than our daughter, Abby.
Mm-hmm. Our due date was 4 weeks apart.
Oh, and then you went.
Then I had late. The longest pregnancies of all time. So.
But it was kind of beautiful because I think one of the things I really grieved was this experience of being able to be pregnant with you and like do the whole pregnancy thing together. And that was one of the reasons that you being pregnant with Violet was so tough, was I think I'd pictured in my head what it was going to look like. And it was so different than what it looked like. And then with this next pregnancy with George, it was sort of like our chance to do it.
Yeah.
And that was really exciting.
It was exciting. I was also nervous to tell you about that one, too.
Because you thought I'd be like, cool, enjoy your free baby.
Well, and also like, can I have 2 seconds to like celebrate this? But then it turned out every other person in your life conceived a child at the exact same time.
Pretty much, I think probably 4 or 5 of my dear friends were due within a month of myself. And a lot of them were not planned pregnancy. And I was kind of annoyed.
Yeah.
But in like a funny, are you serious kind of way. Right. Not in like actually annoyed, but just in a like, enjoy your free baby kind of way.
I was happy that you were due first.
Really?
Because I wanted like you to go through all the milestones ahead of me. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah, instead of lapping me.
Right.
Exactly. It's like you already had a turn. Now it's my turn.
Right.
And then you can have another turn.
Right.
So what could I have done, do you think, differently to have better supported you, you know, throughout your pregnancy when I was still struggling? And is there anything I could have done or anything that I could have thought about from your perspective that maybe would have made it better or easier or happier?
I mean, that is a really tough question because I think you did the best you could.
Yeah.
Which is, it's hard to be like, I wasn't enough.
Be less yourself.
But I think like things I missed during that time, I wish I could have like told you all like the nitty gritty details of like all the things and like what we were planning. Like I wish I could have like talked about like birth more, which is a passion of mine.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I would like when you go through things like that, that it's not something. The expectations are like what somebody is able to give.
I know I did my best, but my best was pretty shitty.
I mean, it wasn't shitty. I mean, I think we've grown a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our friendship has recovered.
It has. And I think that's one of the things that I'm really grateful for, because not all my friendships have ended up this way. Like, I've lost a lot of friends going through this and trying to find the space to be happy for them while still doing what felt true to me.
Yeah.
And that's a really fine line, because you're going to disappoint people and there are going to be things that you can't do or ways you can't show up, and people won't like that.
Yeah.
And so I think it's rare to find someone so gracious who could give me the space and the flexibility to sort of navigate my own messy feelings in my own way and could show up in the ways and places that I could.
And I think that's what I wanted.
How did you know, like, how to support me? And how did you, was this, like, a challenge for you? Or are you a naturally empathetic person? Or how can people who might want to support their friends going through infertility who are pregnant, how, like, what can they do?
I do think I am a naturally empathetic person.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, empathy was one of my strengths.
From the StrengthFinder test.
From the StrengthFinder test.
Which we are obsessed with. Oh my gosh. This is not an ad for StrengthFinder, but we are super intense StrengthFinder nerds.
And I've always been an empath.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that because we had this base of unconditional love, like I knew we'd find our way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just tried to be a good listener and not like tell you how you should be feeling, or I tried to just, that it was a lot of learning for me about like, how can I listen and not like give you advice?
You also never made me feel badly for crying in public, which I have a tendency to do a lot.
I support crying in public.
What advice would you give to people who are trying to support their friend who are going through infertility, miscarriage, or loss?
I think be there, listen, and don't try to, like, fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Just, there's no, like, platitude or thing that you can say that will make it better. And I think what I've learned is to just show up and be there, even if it gets, times are tough and it might get weird. But to like stay the course, and you can't always fix it.
No, you mostly can't fix it.
Right.
So
you have to be okay with that.
I think that's the part that's the hardest, is being okay with not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things I hated hearing was, it's going to be okay. You're going to be parents. I just know it. Right. Like, on the one hand, I loved hearing that because it felt good to hear someone else have faith in the universe in a way that I never had. But on the other hand, it also was really damaging because I knew that wasn't true. In that I knew that nothing was owed to me and that there were plenty of people who were worthy of having kids who wouldn't be as lucky or who didn't have the resources to pursue IVF mm-hmm. or adoption or any other type of option. So for me, I really appreciated the honesty of just hearing, like, I'm so sorry you're going through this. This super sucks.
Yeah.
Do you want to go to the movies? Do you want to hang at home? Do you want me to stop texting you? What do you want?
Right.
And then I felt like I could sort of dictate what I needed in the moment, which changed day to day, too, yeah. to be honest. Like, some days I was like, I need to go out and get hammered. Right. And then there were some days where I was like, I need to sit quietly in my room and journal and read Mary Oliver right. poems.
I've never felt like that, but I support that. I think you have to just read what the other person needs and, like, be there for them that day. In that situation.
And I think you're also really good at not taking things super personally. And I think that even though you were disappointed that maybe I couldn't celebrate with you in a way that was ideal, I think you also knew that it had nothing to do with you.
I agree, yes.
Which I think a lot of people take boundaries really personally, or they feel rejected. And I think you knew that I loved you. I just...
Mm-hmm.
couldn't necessarily be there for you in the way that you needed me to be there.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to our foundation of unconditional love. Like, I think you're right. I knew, I definitely knew that it was not me.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for being here today, Jackie, and for getting really detailed about our friendship and for talking about hard stuff and for being an introvert who agreed to be on a podcast. I feel like you deserve some kind of award or friendship medal or something.
A podcast is actually pretty introvert friendly.
Oh, yeah?
It's just one-on-one.
That's true. And we're recording. There's no one else in here.
Right.
We both have our hair pulled back. It's very, like, you don't need to be camera ready.
Right.
Although Jackie always looks camera ready. She's the most photogenic person I've ever met. It's really annoying.
It's not true.
It is true.
I feel very un-camera ready.
You are very camera ready. She's pretty much a model. Anyway, I will not stop. As your best friend, it is my job to make you uncomfortable and flatter you unconditionally all the time.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for being with us today, Jackie. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
This is the last episode of this season of Been There, Injected That. And we have worked so hard to create season one of this podcast and are excited to keep improving it. So thank you so much for listening and for all your support as we work to tell different stories from infertility warriors, industry experts, and others who care so much about supporting this community. If you have an idea for a topic or a future guest, please email us and let us know. And with that, bye-bye for now.